Welcome to the Mom's Day Bunker with Carrie Henson. In the bunker, you will find joy, grief, laughter, and remembrance. It is a safe place for moms to gather during the storms of motherhood, to share stories and to encourage each other as we navigate doomsday moments that change the trajectory of our path as women. Our stories contain difficult subjects that may be triggering for some listeners. These are real stories from real moms that are surviving, have survived, and are thriving after the unthinkable happened. Please take care of your mama heart as we cozy up together, take shelter from the world, and begin. I wish I had met Jake.
Oh, no.
You know what? I might have because we were here.
Oh, you may have.
And Anna was in the nursery and the kids were all in their classes and we were, you know, but it's like these passing ships that you never know exist. And I've just only heard stories. And how did y'all come up with Dino Jake? I've always wondered that. Did I tell you when we were there, his dino picture
still on the wall?
Was still on the wall.
It's still there. Or it was even up to a couple of months ago. So, you know, the whole idea. So when you go into Texas Children's, every room has a little, I don't know what you call it, like a little platelet.
Placard?
Yeah, outside of their room where someone, I expect it was intended for the nurses probably to slip a slip in there on a child's name or however it is so that people would know who's in what room. So before they go in, maybe the doctors and nurses aren't just constantly looking at the file going, oh, which child am I walking in on? They could go in and say their name or something. But it got to where they were never used. And so a lot of the patients would put their name in the little slot. Mm-hmm. Or they wouldn't. I mean, so many times you walk around and nobody's name is in there. But he and his sisters, a lot of times they would color something and they'd always put his name in and you know, they thought that was fun. I'm not explaining it as well as I would like. But anyway, so one time we put his sister actually drew the little rainbow and underneath wrote Jake and they slipped it in the slot together. Well, they couldn't get it back out. And so it's still there. Here we are all these years later.
So is it there because no one can get it out?
No one can get it out.
He is there like
permanently until they take those things down or they, because it's kind of got a little plastic or glass covering, you know, to where they'd have to, I think, break that spot off that in order to access inside the panel.
Story. Like, you know, it's through, have you heard that says through from the mouths of babes, through the actions of babes. We are remembered, you know?
It's so funny. And so, regularly I will still get photos from someone who's on the floor or one of the nurses going, I still see Jake.
Oh,
and
I love that. Did y'all have a favorite nurse? Oh, well, tell me Dino Jake.
Oh, Dino Jake. Okay. So somehow, so when he was little, he would focus on certain things. So for the longest time it was Diego and then somehow it transferred and before I go forward to the dinos, he had this little bitty Diego. You know, the arms move, the legs move. It was one of those, probably about 6 inches. He carried that around in his little hand so much that on the rear end of the of Diego, his butt is
smooth.
The paint came off, so it looks like his little butt is.
He's got
is showing
booty?
Through the blue jeans.
Oh no!
So cute. I have it in my bathroom. I see it every day. It's so cute.
Oh, that's funny.
Anyway, then he transferred somehow into dinosaurs by the time he was probably between 2 and 3. And this kid could not, I think because he was the youngest, everyone spoke for him. So he just was not speaking well to the point where we put him in speech therapy. Because I'm like, I don't know what's going on with this kid. All my kids speak fine. But he, as he was going through speech therapy, he could name those dinosaurs. He knew everyone. He just somehow took to it. He could speak dino language all day long. Someone would come in, they'd miss, you know, they'd say the wrong name and he would correct them. And so he, every shirt he had a dinosaur on it. His jammies had dinosaurs on them. His shoes had dinosaurs on them. He was carrying them around everywhere he went, all of these things. So when we got to the hospital, you know, a lot of the nurses, the doctors, they try to find a way to connect and just have that trust built. And you know. And so somehow through all of that, because he was always the Dino Kid, someone started calling him Dino Jake. And I don't even remember who it was. And from that point forward, it just stuck. And I mean, we would even go down to radiology. They'd be like, oh, Dino Jake, here he comes. He'd just bounce in with his stuff. And he didn't mind being called that. He thought that was great. But that's how that took root.
That is so cute.
You know, as a mom sitting in a hospital with a kid all the time, you've got all this time. You're just sitting in your way, and you're not. There's nurses constantly coming in. They're checking vitals. They're administering medication. They're messing with them. They're making sure they're going to the bathroom. So we're having to get them up and, you know, get them across a room while they're attached to all these machines and these tubes. And it's just a constant, there is no time for anything. And then when there is, you're so exhausted that, and most of the time they just want to be held. And so there's not a good time to have great conversations and updates with people. Tracy was my social media person, updater. She'd call people. She'd, you know, tell the church what was going on, organize the meal tray. I mean, she was her, there were a good group of about six of them, but she was kind of the lead on a lot of that.
Yeah, that's, it's essential. I had one of those too. Mm-hmm. I mean, and again, there was a group of them, but I had one that I would just filter everything to. Mm-hmm. And then she would get the information out for me because it's overwhelming, you know, and people care and they want to know, and they're going to, if you don't get the, I found that if I didn't give them the information, I was going to get 1,000 texts.
Yes. Yes.
And I could not emotionally handle that, or physically, because I was pregnant. I couldn't physically handle it. I just needed some form of non-chaotic
that buffer
time in my life, you know, because it was just, it was a lot of chaos. Well, you know, I mean, it's just hard. I love that Dino Jake. Did I ever tell you that when Hake was in the hospital, we went to the gift shop because those rooms, we were even at a kind of a children's, I mean, it was a regular hospital, but they had a children's ward. Mm-hmm. It's very small. It's Mobile, Alabama. It's a very small medical center. Mm-hmm. And so I went down and I got him a stuffed animal. Mm-hmm. And I got him a blue dinosaur. It's like little, maybe about, you know, this big. Mm-hmm. And I put it next to him. And a couple of days go by and we get him in a wheelchair and we start moving him, which was very painful. And I take him to the gift shop and I said, Hank, I will buy you anything you want.
Yes.
Like, the sky's the limit.
Oh, I could tell you stories. Yes.
And he looked at me, looked. And at this point, he wasn't talking still. He didn't talk maybe two words until Harry arrived, until he came to the hospital. Then he started talking. But he very quietly, at the end of the day, he didn't buy anything. At the end of the day, very quietly, he said, Mommy, I know what I want to buy now. I was like, okay. So we go through the process. I get the nurse in there. We gently lift him into the wheelchair. We fix his leg. You know, he's crying. It hurts. I mean, his just whole left side was shattered. Get him back down the elevator and go. And he picks out this ginormous red T-Rex. It was like $80, you know, like so overpriced. But that's what he wanted. So I got it for him. And he said, thank you. My other dinosaur needed a big brother.
Oh my gosh.
I was like crying. I was like, it's okay, your big brother's on his way. You know, he's got two big brothers, but I think he really needed, he needed G, because they're only 15 months apart. And G was with him when it happened, you know. But he needed his big brother. Mm-hmm. And then I think the next morning, Harry showed up and he started talking, like really talking. Wow. He's like, became animated, and it was, I mean, it was just, but they were dinosaurs.
So,
and you know, I thought of Jake. Yeah. Every time I see a dinosaur, I think of Jake.
I love that was so specific to him, because even to this day, I receive texts or Facebook messages or posts where people will see something dinosaur and they'll send that to me and say, oh, look at this. I'm thinking of Jake. He would love this. And that touches me in a way that I can never put into words. But it's funny that you bring up the whole gifting, if you will, because as you know, sometimes there are bribes that take place yeah. in order for our kids to yes. take the medications or the pokes or just even get their mindset ready to reenter the hospital for another round of chemotherapy. So we had gotten to where there were times when he had had, you know, maybe he had come off of a really hard week of being in the hospital, or he'd had a really great day that we absolutely said, we're going to Toys R Us. This is pre-Toys R Us closing down. And so he'd get very excited, but we would go in because it closed at 10 p.m. We would go in at 9:30. No one was there. And this is a kid who is now, you know, very versed in how to not be sick from germs. Mm-hmm, and he would mm-hmm. walk around the store and not touch a single thing.
Wow.
Walk every mm-hmm. aisle. Just, I mean, lit up, just so happy to be there. But that was a part where I was very proud of him. And then there's that part of me that just kind of, your heart breaks going, this is a kid. Any other kid would be touching everything. He touches nothing. Yeah. But he points and he asks us to get them down and he asks us, move it that way and let me see and turn the box. And then he'd walk out with his toy. We'd get home, we'd scrub it down and he'd have his toy. But even the people in Toys R Us, when they got very accustomed to us coming in at 9:30 at night, and we had a couple of them that would sometimes walk around the store with us and just talk to him and got to know him, and it was precious. I mean, that was a very, even though there's a little bit of that sadness around that memory, there's more joy just because I remember how he would light up as soon as those doors opened and he walked in.
And I bet the employees lit up too.
They did.
Maybe you saw it or maybe you didn't see it. I don't know, because it was just a...
Oh, we saw that.
Hard mm-hmm. time. And, you know, yeah. they're, and you know, they're going to remember him. Mm-hmm. They're always going to remember him. Like, I remember the little boy that would come in at 9:30.
Yeah.
You know?
It was, that's neat. I hadn't thought about that in a long time until you said that.
I'm glad I did.
Yeah.
Yay. They're so, I don't know, kids are incredible. The way they see the world, mm-hmm. I think, is incredible.
It is funny. Even when there were many times when he was feeling okay and we would leave the room and we'd say, oh, we're going to go down and we're going to go to the gift shop or something like that. Mm-hmm. And we would actually go all over the hospital, or we'd say, we're going to go out to the garden. I don't know if y'all ever got to do that, but there was, and they were okay with that, you know, for the most part, as long as he had his IV pole and everything was good. And we'd done it so long, they trusted me to go down with them. But sometimes we'd go to different areas. So we'd often go over to the women's center because the cafeteria over there was different and
they have
bigger.
The circular fish. Did he like looking at the fish?
Yes.
And they have, don't they have like that stars or something on this?
On the ceiling.
On the ceiling.
Yes.
Yes.
And then they have that area. There's an area outside of the cafeteria where there's tables, but then closer to the big windows that oversee Main Street or Fannin, it's just a lot of big cushy chairs.
Yes.
And he would just want to go sit there in the sunshine.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, I feel like I'm at the mall. Or he would want to go just, I know, it was so funny. And I'm going, okay, we'll go
sit in
the
big cushy. Did he spend a lot of time at the mall, Mom?
I don't think we did all that much, but it was enough. I don't know.
It was enough to stick with him.
But it was funny. And then, of course, crossing that bridge over between the Texas Children's and the Women's Center, he loved to just sit over there in the windows and watch all the cars going under us.
Did y'all ever see the train set?
Yes.
Oh. I can't think of the building's name. It was gray. It was like a gray building.
But yes, right across from the...
Abercrombie. Yeah,
yes.
The Abercrombie. And they had that huge train set.
Oh, my gosh.
That's where that was G's spot.
We had one of our biggest meltdowns there because it was time for us to leave. He didn't want to leave. And we were... I was like, we've got to get upstairs. We've got an appointment. We've got to go. And he had a meltdown. And I want to say one of his nurses came by, who also goes to church with us. And she was able to help me move him along. I needed someone else because he was not going to listen to Mom, but he just was not ready to leave those trains.
Yeah.
It made me kind of think at times, I don't want to go back to the trains.
Oh, yeah.
I will not be able to get him out of there.
Yeah. I wonder if he knew where he was going to.
Oh, yes.
Like, I don't, this is fun. Trains are fun.
Yeah.
Doctors suck.
Oh, yeah.
I don't want to go see them. Yes. And we had a common friend, Nurse Peg. We called her Nurse Peg, but I think
we did too.
Did you? Okay.
Well, no, we called her Doc Peg.
Doc Peg.
I don't know how that was, but somehow that's what he started calling her, and it was Doc Peg.
She has a spirit and a heart of just like present. Like she's very present. Mm-hmm. That's what I noticed about her. Like she didn't get amped up for what's coming next. Mm-mm. Like that's me. I'm always amped up. What's next? But she was just very present. Very kind, very calm. And there was one, I don't know why, but there was one appointment that I had to take G to for a scan. It was a scan. And I had Hank with me, but he was little, as like maybe 3 weeks old, you know? And for some reason, my dad wasn't there. I had nobody. Like it was like, I'm going down there and I couldn't take Hank in with me to where G was going. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't let G go by himself. Like, I wasn't going to let a nurse take him. I don't know what we were doing. Maybe it was the MIBG. I think because they have to put him under for that.
Right.
And Nurse Peg was like, Carrie, don't worry about it. I will take care of the baby. And I'm like, he's only 3 weeks old. What do I do? And she was like, it's okay. We'll be fine. And she sat there in the cafeteria, the women's center, and kind of where those cushion chairs were, I remember. And she just rolled that stroller back and forth and held Hank, and it kept him happy for the hour. I mean, those MIBG scans take a long time, and she was great. She was good people. Mm-hmm. She remembered Jake.
Mm-hmm.
I remember having that conversation with her. It's the only time I saw her break.
Oh.
And she broke, and she started crying. She said that was a tough one.
Yeah. We had some amazing nurses and doctors. And at his memorial service, most of them came. I wasn't expecting that. And we had a photographer at his memorial service. She's gone on to start this Pink Dinosaurs. That's what it's called. Because of Jake and another little one, Raylan. And she started, it was just kind of one of those things where she said, you know, I followed these kids. I would like to photograph their memorial services. How would you feel about that? And honestly, I was at such a weird place. I was like, I don't care.
Yeah. <You know? laughs> At this point.
You know, but she said, I'll be very discreet. You know, I'm not going to be in everyone's faces, and it'll be a really beautiful tribute. I think you'll really appreciate it when it's done, because you'll get to look back on that, and there's going to be so many things that, you know, you don't remember, which she was so right. That day is filled with so many emotions, and some of it's a blur and some of it I remember perfectly, but those photos will bring me back to that day, and I can see the joy of that day. And then you also see so much of the humility and the tears and the grief, you know. But those photos, I'm so glad that she did that. But I see she took a couple of photos and didn't even know who they were, of some people in the sitting in the pews, and a couple of them were our doctors, and they were just broken. And it just shows me how much they care, how much they loved him, but how much they are invested in these children.
I'm glad you shared that, because there's times in this world that we don't see the doctor's humanity.
Mm-hmm.
I'm guilty of it. You know, I've learned a lot in the medical community since 2015, and there's a lot of unhelpful parts of the medical community.
Mm-hmm.
These doctors are human, and you can take that as, well, they're human, they're going to make mistakes, you got to keep them accountable, yada yada yada, but they're also like, they didn't become, I don't think you become a doctor, I don't know, I'm not a doctor, but I don't think you become a doctor because you don't care about people.
Mm-hmm.
And you definitely don't become a pediatric oncologist,
right,
if you don't care about people.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's beautiful that they were there.
Mm-hmm. I think you hear this a lot, but you have to lean on your friends and your family and accept the help, because it's there, and people are so blessed to give you their help. but definitely the community around you. We have a family that is not blood because of the relationships that have been built on Jake's story.
If you were president and you can make any law.
Oh, gosh.
Any law, like specific to, let's narrow it down, specific to childhood cancer. What would it be?
The hospital bills, you know, because that is so... And encompassing everything, the pharmaceutical too, because the medications are not always part of those hospital bills. You know, so all of it, I think, for especially family with a child going through cancer, you know, the St. Luke approach or St. Jude's approach, I think, is fantastic. You know, These families have no bills. They can focus on their kids. They can focus on if they, you know, need to take some time off from work. They could be home. They could be with their children. I think, you know, some of that, what is it, FMLA, couple that in there with these bills. Just give these parents some kind of opportunity to care for their children without all of the stress and the worry of whether or not they're going to be able to keep a job, whether they're going to be able to pay the bills, get the medications. I don't know if that totally answers the question, but I think that would be my biggest thing. What about you?
Oh, girl.
Tell me.
It's conspiracy. Oh. It's conspiracy for sure. I just think that there are so many better ways holistically to treat these kids that is being blocked at every turn because you don't make money from it or you don't make as much money from it.
Oh, yes.
And that's not to say that the treatments that they have now aren't valuable. I just think it could be coupled with
other things.
Yes. And, you know, I remember after we finished treatment, having a conversation with our oncologist and telling him that I wanted to start taking him to a chiropractor. Mm-hmm. I wanted to start giving him vitamin C.
Mm-hmm.
And he laughed. He's like, why? He doesn't need vitamin C. That's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Everyone needs vitamin C.
Right.
We have a thing
called
scurvy.
And the chemotherapy patient, especially after all of their bones have been riddled with chemotherapy.
He was like, no, he needs to eat and we can go down the food path too, but like where our food comes from. He's like, he just needs to eat a regular American diet. And I was like, I'm thinking no. Of course, he was little. I mean, he was under two throughout this whole process. And then, you know, it just wasn't going to happen, you know, and I would cringe. I would cringe. And I'm going to get flack for this, but I would cringe when I saw a kid. I saw a kid drinking a Mountain Dew. It was probably 5 years old.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't give my kid a Mountain Dew on a good day, but I sure as hell would not give my kid a Mountain Dew who was going through chemo. What I have learned is that judgment is incorrect because you just want any and every calorie in your kid that you can get.
Mm-hmm.
And that mom and dad were doing the best that they can. Yeah. But at the time, you know, in the fear and in the chaos of cancer and it was a war zone. I felt being on that floor was like being in a war.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a war zone. And I was just seeing dead bodies everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And it was terrifying and it was traumatizing. And I think the comfort I got was, well, I don't give my kid Mountain Dew, so... I'm doing something right, you know, like, at least I'm not that parent, you know, and it obviously doesn't matter, but
it doesn't,
you know, I mean,
we were a Sunny D.
Sunny D.
Not any better, really. If
you know, it's got vitamin C in it. Hey,
it's not real vitamin C. I mean,
I just, so that's what I would change. It's kind of, I don't know, it's encroaching tinfoil hat, but there's definitely clinics and procedures and different treatments out there besides what we get in the mainstream. And why can't we use them? Well, we can't use them because we're being blocked to use them. And there's conspiracy there. Because I know there's going to be cancer moms listening to this going, I know.
Yeah.
I know.
Well, son and I were having a conversation about some of this yesterday, actually. And I do believe that you should be able to couple a lot of those things. And I, too, asked our doctors on certain aspects, and some they were good with and some they weren't. But even toward the end, when they had essentially said, take him home, make memories, really all we can do is keep him comfortable now, I was still out there seeking different things, going to private center for vitamin C infusions, trying to figure out what could we do to get his body stronger? What could we do to possibly hold this back a little bit? And there was nothing. I mean, it was eating him alive, but I couldn't let that go. And even at one point, I asked our doctors because clearly his pain was visible. So he wasn't a complainer, but you could see him walking differently, or in his sleep, he would just kind of, you'd make those noises, those whimpers. And I was like, what can we do? I know it's not legal in Texas, but can we bring in something from out of state? And he said, I didn't hear this conversation, but you do what you need to do. And at that point, I went to my pastor because I was like, what does this do for us? Because I just had so many questions.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, you have the same thoughts that all of us had. Like, mm-hmm. When do we introduce THC? I'm assuming THC, yes. Right? We're not dropping acid.
Oh, no. No, yes.
It is used in the states that it's legal and it is helpful.
And it's helpful.
And then we have states that it's not legal. Mm-hmm. And we're not, I'm just not a debate about whether it should be legal,
right,
or it's not going to be legal, whatever. But when you see a positive effect, mm-hmm. why can you not use it? And that's right. That's the law I would break right there. Listen, we got to stop the bureaucracy. We got to stop the political warfare around our children.
Well, even the lack of sharing knowledge and all of these study, this hospital's doing this study here, this one's doing this one here. They're not always very cognizant of sharing that information with one another. They like to keep it to themselves. And the only way you're going to get it is if you've got an in, or you're starting to speak with those hospital reps and say, I may be considering bringing my kiddo there. What do you have available? It's very difficult. Then you go online and there's a website where you can see all of these different studies nationally that are in these hospitals, but you've got to have a PhD to understand them.
Yeah.
But you do it. It's like we talked about last time. I would go in and I would get a really good handle on what I thought I was learning. And then I'd hit a word and I'd be Googling all the time. It was a constant. And so my notes, were my jargon of what I felt like I was hearing or reading, and then little side notes of what those words meant. It was just a mess. But I blogged during Jake's diagnosis and his disease, and I really stopped after. I just couldn't write anymore. But I wanted people to know what this meant, because we had never met anyone with cancer, mm-hmm. much less a child. And seeing what these children go through, I wanted people to know how horribly funded it is for research and how much these children suffer, and just bring some awareness to what was going on. And so that's where so many people also came to know Jake, was through the blog. It wasn't just here at church. There were people that were contacting us internationally, even, that somehow I caught on to his blog. And I was very grateful for that and very surprised, because he was just a little boy. It says, not what we expected. My tummy was in knots today. Stepping out of those elevators for the first time is an emotional experience. There were no tears, but lots of anxiety. As you walk in and you see all the children, it's hard to stomach. To think that my child is in the same category as some of these children is hard to believe. Some of them look so sick. Many of them have no hair. My child looks healthy. He's having a good day, no fever, good energy. His spirits are high. He has no idea where we are and what this means. We filled out our paperwork, and they came out to ask for our disc from Dr. Wong's office. I forgot it. Crap. I forgot it. They came out to get us. I'm kind of jumping around in here just to give you an idea of what this kind of looks like as a day in the life of an early cancer patient. We get back to meet our doctors, and Jake is bubbly and cute, and they all talk dinosaurs, and this puts Jake in the right frame of mind to cooperate. They're kind, the mood is light. They tell us this appointment is just a consultation, nothing to be worried over. We really don't know what this is yet. We've just seen a mass. There's much to find out, and we'll take a look at Jake and figure it out if you're even in the right place. They remind us that what we saw is still very undefined. We just don't know. They have lots of questions for us. We have lots for them. We're sent for a high-def x-ray, and when we return, the mood is different and much more serious. They pulled up the scans and show us that Jake has spots on both of his femurs, his kneecap, and his pelvis. This is not what we expected. I have that feeling again, like falling off the swing flat on your back. They went on to say that they do not believe this to be osteosarcoma, but possibly neuroblastoma. It's showcasing all the characteristics, and they don't believe the anomalies will be where it started. They believe the source of origination will be found somewhere in the abdomen. We plan for more tests and meet up later in the week. We leave stunned and confused and terrified. A while back, our Tuesday Girls Bible study did a study on breath prayers. That kept running through my head, and I couldn't think of what or how to pray. All I could pray was a simple breath prayer of, Lord, help us. Yesterday, we went to our CT scan, and all went pretty well. They told us we would have to sedate Jake. We didn't. He did great. He did need an IV, and that wasn't a nice experience, but we were in and out in a couple of hours. The nurse that was overseeing us was nice, but not overly warm and fuzzy. But as we left, she told me to be strong, she hugged me, and she would be praying for us. Henry and I just looked at each other, both of us thinking that was odd. Today, we found out why. Our meetings have usually consisted of words like tumor and mass and anomalies. The word cancer hasn't been used that often. This gave me hope. Even though the definition of all of those always circle back to the word cancer, they had prepped us that they felt that the place of origin would be found elsewhere and probably in the abdomen. And that's all I've been praying for, that it's not there. We can deal with bone cancer, but it's very hard to wrap your mind around the idea that your child could have cancer in the abdomen. It's vague and it's vast. I've been praying and praying and praying all day, all night, every waking moment. God, please take this. Don't let it be in his abdomen. Our doctors entered the room together and they sat down and began. It is cancer. It has all the characteristics of neuroblastoma, and just as we suspected, it's in his abdomen. The mass is about the size of a grapefruit, and there are spots in the liver. The next step is to biopsy, and we can do that tomorrow. The liver. That was unexpected. They continued, we'd like to start treatments as soon as possible. He'll need a chest port. We can do that at the same time as a biopsy. While he's under, we'll need to get bone marrow and see if it's in the marrow. Wham! We were stunned. How much more? When will we know everything? What is this biopsy good for? There were so many questions, and they answered them all. We found that the biopsy stages his cancer, gives him the cells to officially diagnose his neuroblastoma, as well as the other exploratory measures to help them plan Jake's treatment. We would head into surgery tomorrow, and they would have all of the pathology results back next Thursday. How does this happen? Last week, we were living with a healthy 4-year-old boy, and a week later, our world was spinning out of control. And that was pretty much 2 years of his journey. We would get into treatment, we'd start to see a little progress, and wham! We'd be hit with something else. And so with neuroblastoma, like you know, it's kind of a very dirty disease as far as it's an angry disease. And for kids that can follow basic protocol with their treatment, meaning they hit their milestones, they get in for treatment, they hit their counts after, and they go back into treatment within the designated time period, that first protocol of therapy works for them. There are kids like Jake who almost out of the gate do not hit those mild markers. So he goes in for chemotherapy, and the first chemotherapy knocked him to the ground. And we were back in the hospital within 24 hours, and we were there for several weeks. We didn't make that next chemotherapy date. They did give him chemotherapy for his second one. He made them eventually, but he was not making them within the amount, allotted time, if you will. Mm. And what that means for a cancer patient is that they give you chemotherapy, your ANC drops, all of your counts bottom out, and then the body starts to rebuild. You hit a certain marker, and then you can take your next chemotherapy. And they really got it down with, after years and years of doing this, of what that should look like. For some of these kids, their ANC bottoms and they can't get their counts back up. Their bone marrow is failing. And when it starts failing at such an early time in treatment, we don't know that as parents, but the doctors are starting to be signaled very early on that this is probably going to be a kid that's not going to make it. They're not sharing a lot of that with you up front. They continue to offer hope, and I'm so glad that they do, because they're trying, and every kid's different. But he was not making it back to his treatment in the timely amount of days or however you want to say it, that he should have. And so in the beginning, some of that chemotherapy was pushing back. We would do some of the scans and we'd see less disease. But then something would happen, and because we weren't, part of that chemotherapy and why they do it so back to back is so that it just continues to push that disease back, because the disease finds a workaround. And so when it can find the workaround around that chemotherapy, if there's been too many days in between treatment, it gives it that lax time. And so what happens is the disease starts, it's like it's mad and it blows up. So we would push it back, and then something would happen, and all of a sudden we'd have more disease, and we'd push it back some more, and it looked like we were making progress, and we'd have more disease. And this just kept happening. His tumor resection, which was to remove the large mass on his adrenal gland, was supposed to happen somewhere in January or February. It didn't happen until April. So that gives you a little bit of an idea of what we were looking at. And they really try to keep you on track so that this disease doesn't have that time to find its workaround. That was the big theme, it seemed like, of Jake's disease, is just a constant, what now?
How old was he when he passed?
6 and a half. When you have a child diagnosed with cancer and you hear that they will not make it, from that moment, there is this limbo of when and how. What's it going to look like? What's it going to feel like? This prayer, this constant prayer of, God, don't let him suffer. And one of my dear friends, Jean Smith, gave me a book on the mercy prayer. And I just, again, resort back to those breath prayers as, God, have mercy, God, have mercy, God, have mercy. And I think for months, probably over a year, once, again, I'm going to back up a little bit, but Jake's diagnosed in October. By May, they're starting to talk to us about trials. We didn't understand what that meant, but essentially what that means is he's not going to make it. We've got trials we can put you on that might give a little length to his life. It may give comfort, a little bit better quality of life, but these trials are not for him. They are hopefully for future children's survival. So here we are in May, and he lived another year and a half almost. So we're very thankful for that. But at that point, that year and a half as a mom, you know, it's coming.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
There's nothing that can prepare you, but all you can do is stay up many nights, you know, praying, take this. How can this be happening? And so the day he passed, it was the middle of the night, and I tried to give him some medicine and he took it. So he was still very conscious to an extent toward the end. I mean, hours before he passed, he wasn't speaking much, but he could, you know, he would call for me, or he'd say, you know, rub my hands, rub my feet. He loved to have me just kind of rub on his little feet. And I just remember there was something in the room. I was just pacing all night in the room, and then I'd lay down with him, but I had to be very careful because his little abdomen was swelling so much. The cancer was really taking over in the end in his liver, and it was so distended. He looked like a little Ethiopian child. And so I couldn't really cuddle him like you would think. I could just wrap my arms around, you know, his kind of his arm or his foot. But there was something in the room. I almost felt this presence. And Henry was, wouldn't you know, Henry gets strep right as Jake is passing. So he can't be in the room with us very much. And when he is, he's masked and he's feeling horrible and he's terrified he's going to make Jake sick and make him feel worse than he already is. And I can't explain it, but I just felt this feeling in the room And I knew the angels were there for him. And I couldn't really put it in words. And I always felt like this is a weird thing to talk about. You know, people aren't going to understand this. But there was this presence, this, it was a calmness, yet I was so anxious because I knew they were coming for him. And Jake's eyes opened and he was breathing pretty laboriously. And I just was rubbing his little hands. And I, at that moment, knew I needed to get Henry downstairs. So I was calling for him. And he came down and we were there. And his breathing became very deep. And then it just stopped. And at that moment, he entered heaven.